off top, get a little bit serious. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Robert Sarver situation. He's the governor of the Suns, which is, I guess, what they call the team owners in the NBA. He's being punished because for 1 year, he's banned from all arenas and all NBA and WNBA related things, and also being fined $10 million because the findings in the report from the NBA found that he was guilty, I guess, of creating a inequitable environment for women, and guilty of racial slurs, using racial slurs, the N-word 5 times. All of the specifics of it, I think, are very interesting, and I think everyone should check out the story to get a full grasp on it. But I think my experience as a leader in a union leads me to want to talk more about the specifics of the punishment. And I think the purpose of punishments in general, like in sports or otherwise in the judicial system, like you want to accomplish a few things with punishment. You hope to protect people. You hope to deter other people from committing this similar act. You want to create some sort of like retribution. And I guess you also want to like create an opportunity for rehabilitation for the guilty party. And the reason why this particular punishment to me falls short is, one, first of all, the way this is set up, it's Adam Silver works for the owners, and the NBA is run by the owners. Adam Silver is, frankly, the same as Roger Goodell. He's a bit of a manager for the owners who own the league. So when you really think about who's levying the punishment, it's an employee levying a punishment on their employer. And also, like, kind of checking with the employer's friends, which is the other governors slash owners, depending on the sport, to make sure that they're okay with it. And like that is, you hear often that you want to, in these big time situations, you want to avoid the like perception of impropriety. Like, this seems like an obviously unfair and biased situation, and figuring out a way to do this differently, I think, should be the future of all professional sports. Creating an opportunity to hold the owners as accountable as players are held or have been held. And not to say that the discipline system is perfect on players, but it certainly seems a lot closer. And part of that is because the players don't have much leverage in this situation, or they don't have any leverage in the situation over the decision makers, nowhere close to the way that the owners have leverage over Adam Silver and the NBA at large. And I don't know what the future of this is. I don't think it changes, because who's incentivized to change it? Like, I think a best situation, we saw how in the Deshaun Watson case, there was an independent retired judge who kind of made a decision on the punishment. Eventually, it all got back to Roger Goodell, and then he extended the punishment. But the idea of having an independent judge or a panel of independent judges that are selected by jointly between the Players Association and the union, like, I think that would be the right way to go to ensure that we have a situation where the owners are held to the same kind of expectations as any of us are. And I would actually believe, I was gonna say I would argue, but I do believe that the owners should be held to an even higher standard, particularly within the workplace. In this situation, like, there are lots of benefits that come with owning a basketball team and being a billionaire. But along with those benefits should be higher expectations and like more responsibility to protect the people who work for you and create an environment that is fair and equitable and safe for those people. I'm not sure what the employees or former employees of the Suns will do if they're going to attempt to take some sort of legal action, because I think that would be reasonable to point out that they aren't actually being protected, and that 1 year fine is not deterring Robert Sarver, who has been accused. Like, these accusations go across decades, and A 1 year suspension and a $10 million fine is not, in my view, a way to deter anybody from doing or to deter these guys from doing these types of things. So I don't know where any of this ends up. I'm not optimistic about this situation changing in any major sports, in part because who's going to change it? Like the players and the CBA do not have the interest or leverage to compromise or sacrifice in order to change the situation, and no one else is going to step in. So I'd love to end this on some sort of optimistic note about how things are going to get better and we'll change things, and but it won't change unless, frankly, we care enough, because that's what happened with the Donald Sterling situation. Was he lost his team because we made a lot of noise, and we made a lot of noise because we had an audio recording. And there's no reason to suggest that what Robert Sarver is guilty of is less egregious than what Donald Sterling is guilty of, only because, or at least the reaction is different, because we don't have like a smoking gun to point to and yell about and get riled up in the way that we did over Donald Sterling, and the way that the players did over Donald Sterling. So I don't know what the future holds for leagues and how they are going to reprimand owners or try to address their misbehavior, but I certainly think that we're not at a good place right now.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
All right, let's get right to it. It's a big game tonight. It's a big game last week. It feels like we're going to have big games every week, particularly in like the primetime spots, Monday night and Thursday night. But this one is a monster from the AFC West. We got the Chiefs and we got the Chargers. And this like speaks to a bigger conversation that you and I have been having, and how it feels like we have different tiers of quarterbacks. We've always had that, but there's like a brand new tier that was like rare, where like some quarterbacks could reach this level every once in a while. You know, like the best quarterbacks in the league, occasionally they could have a season that was as good as like four guys in the league, four or five guys in the league have every year. And it feels like it's not an aberration. Like, this is the future of the league. You used to be able to win with like a franchise quarterback, like, which is like a good guy. There was a guy you could win with, and occasionally a game he'll like put the team on his back or something. But now we have these, I don't know, Mahomes, Herbert, obviously, Jackson, who else?
I almost think the original prototype,
Josh Allen, of course.
Josh Allen, yeah, Rodgers.
Rodgers, like,
I know Rodgers hasn't won a Super Bowl in a while,
but you're right, Rodgers. Rodgers is that guy, but I feel like Rodgers was the last time that we had – was the last time it was normal.
Yeah.
Rodgers was that guy, and we were like, oh, that's the guy in this era. Like, before that, it was Peyton Manning. Before that, it was like Dan Marino or John Elway. But – and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is just, like
– no.
My, like, messed up perception, but it feels like there's a new level of quarterback in the league.
I think there are a few things going on here. One is the way that they're drafting quarterbacks now. And I think a lot of this actually switched with Josh Allen. I really do, because everyone for so long was trying to draft off, you have more college starts, you're going to be a better pro quarterback. You can't teach accuracy, but you can develop, you can get, you're physically stronger, get fitter, get, be able to take more hits, ball placements, everything. And then something like Josh Allen and Mahomes happened, guys who were objectively underdrafted, and but at the time we thought they were reaches because of their college performance. And that's like a paradigm shift where it's like, okay, efficient football is throwing the ball. If we get these freak shows, this arm talent in our building, and we can play high margin efficient football with freakish talent, that's a better risk for us to take drafting. And that's like, I mean, that's like the logic that Kyle Shanahan had for drafting Trey Lance, where I was like, this is a brilliant pick at the time, because like, you know, we look at some of the other guys, the guys who you say are former franchise quarterbacks who are now like sort of mid-tier franchise quarterbacks, Honda Civic franchise quarterbacks, and those guys, everything needs to be right around them. Nothing needs to be right. Things need to be right. Nothing needs to be perfect around these guys for them to be awesome.
Yeah, And when things are perfect around them, they give us a playoff game like we had last year between Allen and Mahomes. And so in this particular game, we have two of those guys. We have Mahomes and we have Herbert. And I think the first question is, how do you slow down either guy, or can you slow down either guy? And if one of them can be slowed down, which one will it be? And it's weird because I think that the Los Angeles Chargers have the personnel to give Patrick Mahomes trouble. But I still kind of feel like Patrick Mahomes is going to win, because it's like part of this is the way that people are thinking about quarterbacks and the way that people are drafting. But another part of it is about analytics coming into the game. And here's where it's pretty early to like stumble across the big thought of the week, but or the big thought of the show, which we've been lucky enough to stumble across a few of them each time or each show. But the one that kind of comes to mind for me right now is that the rule changes kind of have, in the same way that we have rule changes change the way that basketball works, that's the rule changes in football have changed the way this game works. But football, the big idea, I guess, to me is that analytics has entered every sport in our country, every popular sport that we watch. And it's made all of them worse and less interesting. Like basketball is a little less interesting because everyone kind of plays the same way. And that's not completely fair. There's a couple like aberrations and you're seeing special players that allow their team to do things slightly differently. But by and large, everyone's like threes and layups, and and basketball junkies kind of hate how it's gotten boring. And baseball, we don't have to get into that. Oh, obviously, my
God. Baseball's so bad.
Yeah, the shifts and all that stuff and the home runs and strikeouts, like the stats around baseball, like how often people used to strike out, rather compared to how often they strike out now, and base runners, and like the exciting parts of the game are out. But football, and I think it's in part because of the complexity of the game, analytics has made it more interesting. You know, like there's more diversity, even though everyone feels like there's a variation of the Shanahan zone running scheme. It's not true. It's not everyone. And there's so much you can do in this game. There's so many different ways you can win. You end up with a more interesting game. And the same thing on defense. There are like, there's always a pull to copycat and like homogeneity. There's always some gravitational pull in that for guys to like do, or teams to do more too deep or whatever. But the personnel is so specialized, and there's so many, I think it's probably because there's so many different levers in football, you know, to pull, to find advantages, that you can find advantages in different ways. And it makes it smart that if you have players that, like the Ravens are a great example of that, and that what they were doing last year is like,
exactly,
they had a lot of corner, they had a lot of great corners, so they're going to be super aggressive. And they have Lamar Jackson, so they're going to run the ball a lot with the quarterback. And then you look around the league, nobody else is doing that.
And so one of the things I think is really interesting about the analytics discussion with football. So the basics of analytics, which I think a lot of people misunderstand, is that the goal of it is to just make the highest probability decision at every single decision point. And in basketball, that's really simple, as it being a three versus a two. In football, there are so many different situations. And also the roster construction, as you said, is so different, where like, okay, you can have four receiver sets, and the Chiefs' four receiver sets are going to be drastically different than the Chargers and the 49ers and stuff. And that's what makes the decision point different for each coach. And that's why it's actually been like positive, because it's basically saying, don't do dumb shit anymore.
Right.
And like, of course, there's plenty, like Dan Campbell taking an onside kick. Hilarious. Love that dumb shit. But like, for the most part, like just doing the smarter decision is going to make a more entertaining football game, because there's still diversity of thought.
And to your point, it's about maximizing efficiency. And you can have, like when Lamar won the MVP, the most efficient offense in the league was what the Ravens were doing. And they're like perpetually amongst the most efficient offenses in the league when Lamar is healthy. But because of personnel, no one else can do that. And to your point, like what the 49ers do, pretty damn efficient normally. But not everyone can do that because they not everyone has the personnel. But yeah, it got away from this. Feels like a longer conversation for a future podcast. All right, how about we pivot back to the actual game? It's an awesome game. It doesn't make sense for us to like go too far afield. Who you got winning this game and why?
I got Kansas City. I mean, it's as simple as that. I won't bet against Patrick Mahomes in September.
All right, Time out. Let me try to convince you that you're wrong. Okay?
Okay.
Justin Herbert, who or why would Justin Herbert not have an awesome game?
Keenan Allen's out.
Okay, I assumed you were going to say that. And what is the argument for Patrick Mahomes not having an awesome game?
The defensive line gets pressure on him.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I feel like overcoming Keenan Allen being out is much easier than figuring out what to do about Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack on the edge and Derwin James, who's capable of taking care of Travis Kelce. Like, I actually think that Derwin James can go one for one on Travis Kelce in quarters or in man. If they're blitzing and he gets locked up on him, like I feel comfortable there. And he is their best offensive weapon now that Tyreek Hill is gone.
So, the only thing I'd push back on with that is how much does that matter now that they play like four guys in a much more egalitarian offense? Like they're spreading the ball around more than they ever have.
Yeah. I mean, so I think it matters because if you think about the big drives in Patrick Mahomes' career, he's going to those guys. He's going to Tyreek Hill, who is now in Miami, and he's going to Travis Kelce. And if you believe that Justin Herbert is going to be able to score with them, there's going to be quite a few big drives, and Derwin James is going to make plays on those big drives. So the argument going the other way is what Justin Herbert has to overcome is easier to overcome than what Patrick Mahomes has to overcome. And I guess the only way to push back on that is Patrick Mahomes is that much better than Justin Herbert. Because I think we both agree that the job in front of Patrick Mahomes, if you're just looking at the defense, I guess you could argue he has more help from a coaching standpoint and that offensive line is great, but Herbert's offensive line is great too.
Sick, yeah.
So, right? I mean, is the difference in them, I think we both would agree that Patrick Mahomes is better in large part because he's proven it more often and in bigger moments and for a longer period of time. But they're pretty close talent-wise.
They're so much closer than people realize.
Right.
I remember there's an analogy that you brought up once comparing, you know, people to smartphones. And like, this is the perfect one. Because Patrick Mahomes is the iPhone Max. Like, he's the top-of-the-line iPhone. Everyone has it. Everyone knows how to use it. Everyone knows it's going to be awesome. Yeah. Justin Herbert's like the Samsung Galaxy or the Android smartphone. That's like the nerds looking at you, Mina, looking at you, Barnwell, looking at you, other football nerds. You're going to be like, that phone's just as good as the iPhone Max. And you know what people like me say? Nope. Give me the iPhone Max and give me Patrick. You can build these arguments, but I'm taking the one. I know the home button works. I know how the apps work. I'm good.
Yeah, that's the perfect analogy. That is Justin Herbert versus Patrick Mahomes. And there is some brand value that comes with Patrick Mahomes. But they're so close that I think that the, like, maybe it's the hipster pick or it's the nerd pick or the smart pick, you could argue is Herbert in the Chargers, given all the things that I laid out. I tried to talk you off of the Patrick Mahomes and KC pick, even though I'm going to pick Patrick Mahomes and Kansas City. But did I do a good job? Are you at least second guessing?
I'm honestly torn about it. I'm torn about it because this is one of those games where, like, I think we vigorously agree about most of it, that my football brain thinks that the Chargers are pretty much on par with the Chiefs.
Right.
But show it to me. Get the win first. Show it to me and I'll start to believe.
All right, here's a different question that I think we don't ask very often in sports media, but let's be honest, it happens. Who do you want to win? Like, we try to pretend like we're impartial. And there's some games that I don't know who I want to win until I start watching them. But you have, like, I got to be honest, the reason why I'm trying to talk myself out of Patrick Mahomes' pick is I kind of want Patrick to win. Like, I like Patrick and the story around him. There's no reason to dislike Justin Herbert. I don't dislike Justin Herbert. I want him to do well also, but I don't want to deal with the storylines of we're passing the torch or he's neck and neck, even though I know it's true. I don't want to hear it. I want to continue to ride on with Patrick Holmes being the greatest quarterback in the history of ever.
This is so funny because I feel the same way. It's like I end up rooting for greatness because I want to be around to have seen it. And I'm like, that's the thing, is like, I want Patrick to keep climbing so I can be like, oh, I saw him, you know, slay this dragon, this dragon, and how sick he's going to be. The other side of that, though, is, you know what's cooler than one Patrick Mahomes?
Yeah.
Two Patrick Mahomes. And if he wins this game in primetime, like Justin Herbert can actually become famous. Like he's the best quarterback who's not actually famous. Granted, it'll be on Amazon Prime and no old people will know how to find it or watch that game, but it would still be a big deal.
The kind of who you're rooting for thing, like it got tested last year, was weird in that playoff game between Mahomes and Allen. Is like, I kind of felt myself again root for Mahomes for those same reasons. And then the way the game ended, I like felt so sad for Josh Allen. I was like, was I actually rooting for Josh Allen?
Yeah.
It's a weird emotional experience, but if we are going to suck emotion out of any segment, it has to be the next one. We're going to do some betting. Teach me how to bet, or am I going to teach you how to bet? I don't know.
Swimsuit, check. Sunscreen, check. Phone charger, check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. And the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
All right. I mentioned to you before that I'm not much of a gambler, but I kind of want to get in. I wouldn't even say I'm not much of a gambler. I've never bet on a sporting event other than like with friends or whatever. I want to kind of get into it. I want to learn about it. So I asked you to come up with some games for me to discuss. And like, the big spreads, like you want to go for the big spreads, right? And it's bananas with the number of enormous spreads that we have out there. Like I don't gamble a ton, but 10 plus points in the NFL, that never happens. It feels like we got some underdog opportunities. So run them down for me.
Okay. One of the crazy things, and if someone has actual stats on this and can tell us the last time this happened, please tweet it at us. Let us know. But there are five double-digit spreads this weekend. Four of the teams that are double-digit dogs, one in week one. They're 1-0 teams. The Falcons are at the Rams. They're 10.5-point dogs. The Seahawks, who beat what we think of one of the best teams in the NFL and the Broncos, or thought were one of the best teams in the NFL and the Broncos, are at the 49ers. They're 10-point dogs. Houston, look shockingly not that terrible in week one. They're at the Broncos. They're 10-point dogs. Our beloved Chicago Bears, they're at the Packers. They're 10-point dogs. And then the one that makes a little bit more sense is the Titans are playing the Bills, and they're also 10-point dogs. But I want to know from you is like, okay, those are five games that a week ago we would have thought are brutal games,
right?
But they're slightly more interesting after it happened in week one. And I want to know if there's matchups that you think is there's actual football value there. Because this is a way to reverse engineer how we should pick them.
Yeah, I think, all right, we'll take them in order. Rams hosting the Falcons, and the Rams are 10.5-point favorites. Like, that feels like an opportunity to go Falcons.
Yeah.
The Falcons collapsed, and I guess you can believe in, like, Falcons jinxes, but They had a interesting offense that was able to move the ball and score points, and the Rams looked terrible. You could chalk it up to the front that the Bills were bringing pressure, or their front was getting pressure without having to blitz. And I mean, they're just really good. The Bills are. So you could say that's why they look really bad. I only think that's part of the reason. I think that offensive line is not up to par. They couldn't run the ball. And Matt Stafford, the injury, we still don't know much about how that elbow is feeling. It certainly didn't seem like he was playing well. So the Rams scoring enough points to win by 10.5 seems like unlikely to me. And Arthur Smith figuring out, they may not win, but figuring out with this offense ways to create mismatches, because they have interesting and outstanding skill position players, and Marcus Mariota, an athletic quarterback that can make it uncomfortable and challenging for this Rams defense. So I'm not picking the Falcons to win, but I feel like that's a big opportunity. Like, you have to agree with me there. Like, the Rams aren't going to win by 10.5 points.
I was stunned when I saw this line. I was stunned when I saw this line because what you said with Arthur Smith, but also just when we saw Matt Ryan play with the Colts this week, he's no longer the Falcons quarterback. He was the quarterback when they were really bad last year. I just don't think that – I think we assumed that there'd be a bigger drop-off between him and Mariota than there actually is, and it doesn't actually seem that way. This is sort of like the Geno Smith paradox, where guys get written off and they're quality mid-tier, low mid-tier quarterbacks that can run an offense, and we think Arthur Smith's a good coach. So I agree with you on this bet. I do have one question. Mm-hmm. When is Kyle Pitts going to be good? Like, I've heard so much about Kyle Pitts. I know he had 1,000 receiving yards last year, but like, I keep expecting him to be like a mixture of like Terrell Owens and Shannon Sharp and Rob Gronkowski, and he continues to just be, I don't know, like a more hyped up version of every mediocre tight end.
Well, I mean, going for 1,000 yards of tight end, I would argue, makes you good, but I think that that could also he has the ability. And it comes down to quarterback and coaching. Because when I watch him play, I don't, like, see a guy who is not as advertised.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's big and athletic and runs good routes and is a matchup problem. So, like, finding a way to properly use him, I think, is the issue. Or finding someone who can get him the ball consistently is the issue in my view. So, like, he might be a guy that we'll end up on another team with another quarterback and another coach, and then we'll be like, hey, that guy was really good. But I think Arthur Smith figures it out. They have the right quarter, or they don't have the right quarterback just yet, but I think this might be the year that you'll – I mean, it's only the second year, though.
I know. I'm totally yeah. overreacting. And also, I'm really overreacting to week one. This is a yeah. classic fantasy football overreaction. Like, you were supposed to be Travis Kelce. I wanted yeah. more from you.
He might still be. Yeah. So yeah, I think we got some money there. We could win a little something there. Then we got Seahawks at Niners. The Seahawks are not as good as the final score of that game suggested. And the 49ers are not as bad as the final score of that game suggested. But I am shocked that they are 10-point favorites. So the Seahawks won in part because Nathaniel Hackett kind of struggled with game management throughout the course of the game and at the end of the game. But what it really comes down to is them turning the ball over in the red zone twice in the second half. You know, like, that was it. The Seahawks defense played pretty well, but they weren't dominating. The Broncos were able to move the ball and should have had a lot more points. And red zone defense tends to be something that is a team is not like particularly good at it. Like, you can be, there's like levels of good, but it also feels like something a lot like turnovers that can be a little bit random. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And like having, it was on the one twice, like those plays could have easily gone the other way. That's 14 more points and the game isn't close. So I guess I see why the line setters do not see the Seahawks as someone who can be close, but 49ers game, they didn't look good either. Like, no reason to believe in them. Like, I feel like I don't want to make a prediction here, but as I'm learning how to bet, I kind of feel like I have to just to find out. And
we can stay away. This is stay away for me.
I agree, but no. We're betting them all because we're not actually betting any of them unless
That's
you are.
Fair. That's fair.
I mean, if I would probably stay away from this, but again, I think I'd go with the underdog. They're going to slow the game down because that's what they want to do anyway. So
this is where we're going to disagree. And this is where my Kyle Shanahan thing. So I have a dog, great dog, but like, okay, say my lovely dog peed on Dobby. The carpet. Dobby, say he peed on the carpet. Normally I'd be pissed, but if it was like a hellacious thunderstorm, a monsoon, and he peed on the carpet, I'd be like, you know what? Got to toss that one out. That thunderstorm, that monsoon was scary. And metaphorically, Kyle Shanahan and Trey Lance peed on the carpet last week. And I'm like, you know what, guys? You'll never have to play in that rain again. I've right. gone through the stages of grieving because I want to believe in that team. And I'm going to disagree because, like, I don't actually think the Seahawks are good. I don't think that Geno Smith's going to complete 82% of his passes again. I think that Kyle Shanahan at home is gonna run the ball. Like, they're gonna start Jeff Wilson. They're gonna be depending on Eli Wilson or Elijah Mitchell, who's gonna be taken out in the middle of the game. I'm pinned into a corner. I'll take 49ers minus 10. Why not?
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll just have to differ on this. I think generally that's just so big for
it's
NFL teams.
It's such a big line.
NFL teams that we say are bad. Like, the skill level difference between the players on either side is still minuscule.
But the only thing I push back on is, like, we just went through how the Seahawks actually should have lost by 14 points.
Right.
And we don't think that the Broncos played a particularly good game at all, and they still should have won by 14 plus points.
Yeah, if this was a 5-6, maybe even 7-point spread,
yeah,
I'd be like, hey, – the 49ers are actually a better team. We didn't get a real accurate look at them. But 10 is so much for two NFL teams. Like, it's going to take a lot for me to go against or go with the favorite on 10 points. So I'm going to say Seahawks, they might lose by 9, but they're not going to lose by 12.
Well, I have a couple follow-up questions because I want to poke holes in your logic. Do you think the 49ers, based on what we've seen, the 49ers or the Broncos are a better team?
The 49ers or the Broncos?
Yeah.
I mean, based on what we've seen so far this year, the Broncos.
Yeah. I guess I think that I kind of think that the 49ers or the Broncos have been more disappointing. Like, the 49ers, we are like sort of an unknown quantity, but right. The Broncos are actually disappointing in that game. And the other thing is, it's emotionally, you have to imagine they're going to play worse than they did in the game against Russell Wilson too.
Yeah. Seattle. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think adding those things up, plus how they actually played when you like add in touchdown luck, I just think, like, as far as 10-point lines go with unproven teams, this might be the safest unproven 10-point line that we're going to get.
All right. I mean, I get your argument. I don't think it's foolish, but you're not going to get me to change. So I'm sticking with they'll find a way to kick a field goal at the end to make it respectable or something like that. That's called a backdoor cover. I learned that. From listening to other degenerates talk about gambling. All right, Houston and Houston at Denver. So I just can't go with a 10 point again. Like, I feel like Denver, I'm more prone to say Denver will win. All right, I'm gonna go the other way. I'm going Denver more than 10.
Okay, we're gonna disagree again.
All right, cool.
I think you're neck shaming. You're neck shaving Davis Mills. Davis Mills hasn't been that bad. Yeah, he's just got a memeable neck.
I mean, he hasn't been that good either. Like, he's conservative. Like, and I guess maybe you need a bunch of turnovers would be your argument to win by more than 10 points, and he's not going to do a whole bunch of that. And their defense is pretty good. Jerry Hughes, who they got from Buffalo, is a monster and is continuing to monster out there. So yeah. And they got Derek Stingley, who's like one of my favorite players in football, cause he's an outstanding cornerback, and he was in college and still seems to be in the NFL pretty damn good. So I get your point, but talk about teams that want to make a statement, and that defense is really good. They're at home. They have a statement to make. Russ, it's not perfect, but I still think he's well above average quarterback. I'm going Broncos Win by 10? That's so
I think you
crazy.
Just lizard so brained me, though. You just used my own logic against me where I'm like, now the Broncos are going to be up for this game because they weren't up for the last game.
Yeah.
And when you give me the narrative structure, I sort of agree with that.
This is how they make their money. Is
10 points.
Suckers like us fall for the narrative structure.
That's right.
That's what makes us believe, yeah, the Broncos. I'm not doing it. I'm staying Texans underdog. I'm going to stick with the same logic that I used in the last game. There we go. All right. My beloved Chicago Bears.
Our beloved Chicago Bears.
Yes, I'm sorry. Our beloved Chicago Bears. This one, I actually think I got to go with the favorite here. Packers. I don't think the Bears are very good. I do think the Packers defense is incredibly talented, and they're not going against Kevin O'Connell and Justin Jefferson. Like, I think Justin Jefferson deserves a ton of credit for the way he played, but Kevin O'Connell did some really impressive and interesting things to get Justin Jefferson in situations to make really good plays. I have no reason to believe that the Bears are capable of doing the same thing, particularly because they don't have a talent like that on their team. And I did not see the innovative offense that you would need to attack that Packers defense. And Aaron's back-to-back MVP.
That's the thing. We're getting
Lazard back. They're going to score a lot.
We're betting on Aaron Rodgers here. And like that's also so many things happen in football where they're like small changes that change the outcome of things, like Christian Watson dropping a 76-yard touchdown pass but still getting open and being a freak. Like, I don't know. The infrastructure for me that I would trust is Aaron Rodgers here. And 10 points normally would seem tough, but I have thrown out the 49ers game as an aberration because of the weather. And if I'm going to do that for the 49ers, I also have to do that for the Bears. It would only make sense logically that way. And I thought the Bears were a bad roster going into it. And I thought Justin Fields gamer in the rain, but no, this is not a gamer game. I mean, I think Rodgers is going to run away with this one. I think we're in lockstep on this bet for the first time.
All right. We only got one more. Is it the Bills? That's the last one.
Bills-Titans.
Yeah, Bills-Titans. Yeah, I'm going Bills.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, do you really – I mean, here's the question, too. Like, if you were to make an argument for the Titans, would you really want to put your hard-earned money and actually, you know, go to DraftKings or whatever big gambling site and actually be like, okay, I'm going to bet on Ryan Tannehill here. I'm going to bet on – but Derrick Henry didn't look good. He was getting touches vultured by Dontrell Hilliard. That was the guy who sort of broke the mold of their offense where, oh, they could still run the ball down by two scores. Good, Derrick Henry. Doesn't look like that anymore. Maybe I'll be proven wrong in a couple weeks, but I don't want to bet on that against like a mutant like Josh Allen and the Bills who look like they're going to beat everyone.
Yeah, I don't see the way that the Titans are able to score enough points. They don't have a decided advantage anywhere. They can't stop Josh Allen. I'm not sure that anyone can stop Josh Allen when he's on his game. And I assume he's going to be on his game. And I don't see advantages for them offensively. I don't see places for them to attack, particularly because that D-line of the Bills is very good. The whole front is very good, and the safeties are very good. So, and the one place where you can attack is the receivers, and they traded their game-breaker receiver away and drafted a kind of tweener guy to take a spot. So it's hard for me. I this is also a bit of confirmation bias because, I mean, I thought the Titans were going to fall back this year. Obviously, no one thought they were going to be number one number one in AFC again, but I don't know. Feels like they're not even going to win their division, which I guess the Colts don't want it either. No one in division wants to win. But anyway, this is not a fun game to talk about, but I will take I will give the points in this situation.
Yeah. Well, and this at least is a fun game theory game because like these big spreads, you at least want to trust the team that's going to score a lot. And like the Bills are going to score a lot in this game. Cool. We disagreed a little bit there.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Dominique, I want to throw some narratives at you. You're a parent. You understand that expectations change.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing changes faster than expectations in the NFL. We have a week to overreact to everything. And I want to ask you about some expectations that have changed going into week two. And I'm going to frame this in sort of a parental way. So the first one, everyone knows the kid, complete maniac. But he can like pull it together. He can Eddie Haskell it. He can charm you for like a dinner when you have people over. You're like, don't be a jerk. But you know they're not reformed. In NFL terms, who played well last week, but you still don't trust? You still know that that maniac is inside them.
First of all, I know the name Eddie Haskell. I know it's like a TV character, right? But I don't know what show it's from. And you're younger than me. It's like, what is that? Happy Days?
Leave it to Beaver.
Same thing. That's the same as Happy Days, isn't it? Well, I don't even know what the premise of Leave It to Beaver. Is Beaver Eddie Haskell?
I have no idea.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you appealing to the 70-plus crowd that loves podcasts with your Eddie Haskell. But the answer is the Seattle Seahawks, right? Is that fair?
Totally. There are multiple answers here.
Who do you got as the team that was fool's goal in week one?
I mean, I've got the Washington Commanders.
Oh, your own team?
Well, here's the thing. I actually convinced myself to be bullish on their offense over the course of this week. And I was like, ooh, Jahan Dotson, like at the catch point, what a freak. Him and Terry McLaurin, I'm on the Wentz wagon. Brian Robbins is going to be back in week five. And I was like, you know what? Don't do this. Don't do this. They're going to break your heart. The Lions are favored for the first time on the road in 24 years. And I don't trust them. You're telling me that Wentz isn't going to come out against a Lions defense that gave up 38 points in week one and somehow throw four interceptions and break my heart?
Wentz was incredible if you cut out his bad plays.
That's right.
Because it's like, and I know that sounds stupid, but not everybody's incredible if you cut out their bad plays. Some teams or some players are like mediocre or bad. That's the thing about Carson Wentz is it's a roller coaster. And the type of quarterback that can throw an interception on a screen pass in a terrible situation is normally not the same quarterback that can lead you on a comeback game-winning drive. So I think you should be excited about them. They still have a D-line, which can be the foundation of a pretty good defense, and they got weapons. And if you think back to Wentz, the best Wentz was he had a ton of weapons and a lot of protection.
Yeah.
And in Philly. And I guess some really good coaching. I guess that might be where you could draw the line here and say he doesn't have as talented an offensive line or as good of coaching. But it did seem like in this game, they were using Wentz the way that you want to use Wentz. If you're gonna go for the Wentz experience,
that's the scary part, though.
Yeah, you
that's
don't want to.
Scary part.
Wentz in the Colts, like more conservative offense, is not. That's not how you're gonna get the best Wentz. You gotta Wentz and Jameis are similar. Like you gotta go for the ride. What's the point in having him if you're not gonna go for the ride? You gotta give him a chance to blow it every time because sometimes he's not going to. He's gonna do something incredible. So I disagree with you. Or because I don't think expectations got that high because they beat the Jaguars. So I think that they have a chance.
Counterpoint. That's exactly right. Counterpoint. You just said they have a chance to win that division. Would you have said that? Would you have said that 4 days ago?
Dak wasn't hurt. No. Yeah, you're right. Because I didn't think the Cowboys were going to win a division either. And Washington's not going to win a division because the Eagles are too damn talented. And they are actually a pretty well-coached football team. So, yeah, you guys aren't going to win the division. Get your hopes down. Sorry about that. You were right. I take it back.
It's okay.
You're going to have some fun weeks, though.
Also, I'm like, you know, putting this out there because deep down, you know, my expectations actually are up. And if I just say that they're not actually up, then it'll soften the blow. Okay, second one. This is sort of the opposite kid or opposite person. You know, who had a bad week one? Maybe went out to a party with their friends, broke curfew, came back, accidentally, you know, knocked over a vase in the kitchen, threw up in the backyard. But you're like, you know what? I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. You're a good kid. I know you can do better. Who's that player or team for week two?
Do the Eagles count?
Of course. Anyone can.
Yeah. I mean, because the Eagles actually won. And they were not, like, getting dominated. But, like, a three-point win over the Lions, I don't believe in the Lions. And the way that their, like, their defense played, their defensive front in particular, was concerning. And I think that they just let me down. I'm not mad. I'm disappointed. They let me down week one. I know that they can do better. I have higher expectations for them. Jalen Hurts even played really well, I thought. So I'll put the Eagles in that boat. Who else could qualify for it? The Raiders could qualify for it, but because their offense, their defense was what I expected to be the big problem, but they had so many turnovers. So, like, I'm not mad. I'm disappointed in their offense. They're going to be better offensively. The Cowboys, they were just as bad as I thought. The Packers, I think, fall into that. I'm not mad. I'm disappointed. They're going to be all right. They're going to figure it out. Their defense will play a lot better, and Aaron will make these weapons into a formidable force. Is that it? Did I cover everybody that I'm not mad at?
You covered everyone except for the one that I think, and we keep going back to it. I think in that same vein, the Broncos are in that too. Like, I'm just also, Russell Wilson's the perfect person that you want to say to, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. Like, that's the Russell experience. I mean, no, because they should be really good.
Right.
That's the thing that I took away from week one, even though they lost that bad team. They should be really good.
Russell lost. I felt like this facade of, like, perfect team, mm-hmm. like, perfect quarterback thing, I felt like it worked on, like, the majority of football fans. But I don't feel like it's working anymore. I think he went too far. And, like, even average football fans kind of think of him as, like, a try hard and, like, phony, right?
I think he's just, like, too much exposure to Russell Wilson. Like, I don't think anyone thinks he's, like, a bad guy. He's just a goober. Yeah. He's just, like a dork. But, like, not a self-aware dork. I actually don't want to sound too mean about it. But, like, that's just sort of the way I feel about it. Like,
I think it's like, it's when you've ever been around someone who thinks they're smarter than you, but actually is like not. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not saying that that's Russell, but I think that Russell feels like he's got us fooled.
Yeah.
And like, maybe we don't know who he actually is, but we know he's not this guy, you know? And it just is like unlikable. I don't know. It's a weird situation because he seems so nice and so likable, but he doesn't seem genuine, which only lasts for so long before I feel like A-Rod is the only one who can pull that off. And he couldn't pull it off for a long time. But right now, A-Rod is in our good graces. And they both have celebrity. I guess A-Rod's no longer with J-Lo, but yeah. I feel like that's what saved his image is the J-Lo romance.
I actually, like, I kind of would love your opinion on this too. Like, it was weird watching, and I don't want to hammer the Broncos too much. It was weird watching the Monday night game and seeing Russ's ex-teammates go on Twitter and absolutely roast him. Like, that was not normal. That was like, and to your point, I think that's like, that takes away like the shiny veneer of Russell Wilson too, because it's like, who do you trust on if the guy's likable more than the people who spend time with him?
Yeah, I mean, it's so many of them too, because I feel it could have helped his image, because some of those guys are like generally, well, not anymore. Actually, I feel like there was a point where Richard Sherman wasn't widely appreciated, but I feel like that shifted some. Obviously, Marshawn is beloved. And Doug Baldwin never was a guy who people didn't like, and it's certainly shifted. I don't know. You would have won money from me if you got me to bet like 6-7 years ago that America would be on the side of the Legion of Boom and not on Russell's side.
Yeah. I mean, too many TikToks. Less Mr. Unlimited, more Legion of Boom. All right, should we move on to the next one?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. I want to know who your car keys player or team is. Just the reliable good guy. Who's that player or team for week two? You know he's going to get everyone home safe.
All right. Well, I feel a need to find someone different that we haven't talked about because certainly giving my car keys to the Chiefs, the Bills, those teams are the first team that I'm handing the keys over to. I would like to say the Ravens. However, they're playing the Dolphins, and the Dolphins are going to blitz the hell out of them, and the Ravens never really figured out an answer for that while Lamar was in the game last year. And I do believe in the Tua McDaniel collabo. So I don't know. It's like I would be happy to throw the Ravens my keys, but they got a real windy road and it's really late at night and it makes me kind of nervous. Let me see. Like the Eagles are another team. Who do they play this week?
The
Vikings. Nope. The Eagles play the Vikings. Y'all can't have my keys either. That doesn't feel safe. The Bengals are playing the Cowboys. That feels safe. But I don't trust the Bengals right now. Yeah, I'm going to throw my keys to Joey B and the Bengals because is that fair? Because I think that the Cowboys are, in this analogy, it is full light outside and they're a straight road and it's just stop signs, no lights, no highways. Like they're going to get home because the trip is easy, not because the driver is as responsible as you think.
Well, okay. I totally agree with that. I think that was one of my picks. The second one, though, I think you're going to disagree with a little bit. I think he fits the concept here, though. I'm going with Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins is going to drive that offense to be pretty good this week. Like the Eagles defense didn't look, I'm not saying they're going to win the game, but like the times we've seen Kirk Cousins be good, it's when he's in a Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Kevin O'Connell offense, which he's back in. He's got Justin Jefferson on his team, who has sort of broken my perception of how dominant a receiver can be through 1 week of this season. And I just think he's going to be steady in this game. I think that team is really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. But if we're going with teams that I feel like I can trust, like in this analogy, getting home is winning.
Yeah.
I don't trust them to beat the Eagles at home. The same way I trust the Bengals to go to Dallas and get a win. I'd love to throw my keys to Tom Brady, but they're playing the Saints, and they can't beat the Saints unless they're in the playoffs the last two seasons. And and Tom Brady also gave us some wild quotes this week. Like, let's talk on the Tom Brady quotes for a second. I believe that Tom Brady has shifted to, like, marketing genius. I don't think that Tom Brady tells us anything that he doesn't want us to know. I think Tom Brady wants to be in the news cycle in order to keep the attention to sell TB12 stuff. Because it's impossible for me to believe that Tom Brady recorded a podcast and released it saying something that would give us or telling us something that seems like genuine and introspective and true about him. Like, frankly, questioning how much he wants to do it. Like he said, I committed to this season, but he also after week one is like, man, bumps and bruises, got to reassess things. It just didn't feel like something Tom Brady would want us to know unless he really wanted us to know it. Does that make any sense or am I talking in circles?
No, it does. And like, it's really weird because Tom Brady has been really manicured, like you said. So it's like a moment of vulnerability. Just you're guarded against his vulnerability.
It's not real vulnerability.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. We're saying it's manufactured because everything else has been.
It's his podcast. Like, it's not like we overheard a conversation that he was having with somebody or there's like anonymous reports. He recorded this, listened back to it, and was like, yeah, get us to the world on a Wednesday when there's nothing else to talk about. Yeah, ooh. Right.
It's also just like
he wants us to listen to his podcast, rate and review it or something.
100%. It's also like he, you know, Giselle tweeted at him, let's go Tom Brady before the game. And he recorded this podcast sort of portraying the narrative that tabloid said that she wants out there. Like, they're communicating to each other in the most public way, which makes it feel much less real, to your point, like a marketing thing.
All right. Keep it going. What you got next for me?
Okay. Next one. You're not hanging out with that kid. You're not hanging out with that player. You're not hanging out with that team. Who's that guy for week two? I have a strong answer for this.
The Bears.
Oh, we have a different one.
Yeah, the Bears. I mean, there's a bunch of them. The Cardinals. I don't want to hang out with them. Who else we got? Oh, man. I can't turn on my beloved Panthers. Are we still a Panthers podcast? Or can we be a Giants podcast? Or maybe we should become a Bears podcast.
Yeah, Bears pod would be good.
But I don't know. I don't really want to.
Can I give you mine real quick?
Give it to me.
Jerry Jones. We're not hanging out with Jerry Jones. Yeah. He's not a player or a team, but he's become a doctor this week. He's changing Dak's time. Did you see that Mike McCarthy said that Dak's thumb is going to heal in 8 to 10 days, but they're still going to play it conservatively?
It's outrageous.
Jerry Jones is doctoring. He's become an orthopedic hand surgeon. We're not hanging out with Jerry Jones.
Yeah, we cannot hang out with Jerry Jones because he doesn't have our best interests at heart. he's concerned about Jerry Jones, not Dak Prescott, and certainly not us. But yeah, I wouldn't hang out with them. I don't know. The Colts make me nervous. I don't trust them anymore. It's a lot, surprisingly. There's one whole game, the Patriots versus the Steelers. Well, no, I can't do that. I have to trust the Steelers, right? They've proven it year in and year out. Got to trust them.
Oh, yeah, and the Patriots haven't?
Yeah, this feels like, I don't know what this is. This is somebody went bad. They're going through a bad phase, right? Is that it? If we continue with the analogy, it's like they just hit 13 and they're rebelling. And these two teams, like I'll come back to them in a few weeks. But for the next couple of weeks, I'm going to let them go through this little rebellious phase because TJ Watt not being there seems crippling. And Mitchell Trubisky throwing the football is an issue. And everything about the Pats feels uncomfortable right now.
Yeah, you know, with the Patriots, it turns out that having an offensive coordinator, that matters. And, you know, maybe don't spend the most money in the NFL on wide receivers and not even have a number one or a number two. That'd be
really look like a bad take from me saying that the offensive coordinator didn't matter that much. I'm not going to give. There's no apologies coming from me on that one just yet. Give me a couple more weeks and then maybe I'll accept that I was dead wrong about that.
We'll check back and have a victory lap on this one. And the last one, that you've charmed me. You can date in my case, hypothetical daughter. Who's the player who can date your hypothetical daughter because of how charmed you were by the performance in week one?
Who was charming? Let's see. A charming team? The Giants. They charmed me. Mm-hmm. I like the Giants. They did charm me. Like, it was a new version of the Giants that made good decisions. Well, Daniel Jones did still fumble and throw interceptions, so he didn't make those great decisions. But generally, I mean, the Giants were one of my picks early in the season to do better, to be much better. And I'm so proud of them because I was the only person to pick them to win, and they actually won. So I'm charmed by them, and they're hosting the Panthers, who are very beatable. So the charming little Giants. I didn't even mean that, but.
You know what's ironic is your offensive coordinator take about the Patriots was so bad, but also it's so right about the Giants. Like, the coaching changes, like, they have Daboll and Wink, and they're coach really well on offense and defense now, and it's like, wow, this changes everything. Look at you scrappy, charming little underdog. Apple.
My takes weren't wrong. They let me down. I'm disappointed in them. The takes are right. Just the Patriots are wrong.
Mm-hmm. For me, my answer, and this is just mostly to double down on this. It's Justin Jefferson. You sort of like you won me over as a player.
You can't. He had almost 200 yards and 2 touchdowns. That's not charming.
All right, fine.
You don't get to be charming. Charming is like, I don't know. I feel like. At least the way you're explaining it is like it feels underdoggy, you know, like a little bit.
I have an underdog then who's another receiver who's dominant, but I think he's the underdog for this one. Steph Diggs Everyone Google the video of Steph Diggs, who would never be allowed to date your daughter.
Yeah.
Granted, I'm just the father of a hypothetical daughter, but Steph Diggs, you're actually my winner here.
I love him. He's great. Go Terps. He's so funny and interesting and talented and well-dressed. Mm-hmm. You remember when he had like two Valentine's Day dates at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
You don't remember that?
No, I do.
Man, incredible content. Like, I'm not much for the social media, but I just decided that I'm going to spend part of this evening scrolling through old Diggs stories on IG, see what he's up to.
He's one of the quietest, most interesting receivers in the league.
Quiet?
Yeah. I think he's much less famous than the other five best receivers in the NFL.
Yeah. I mean,
I guess quiet's not the right word. Under the radar. Under the radar is the proper term.
Yeah, he's as good as it gets as far as I'm concerned. And agreed. I mean, he was the difference when he got there. It's not a coincidence that Josh Allen went from bad to great when Stephon Diggs showed up. So they extended him recently, didn't they? Or if they haven't, they should, because he's a difference maker.
And, you know, just like we talked to put a button on this stuff, is like we talked about the mutant era of quarterbacks. There's also like five or six wide receivers that are mind-blowingly good right now, and he's one of them.
All right. I think it's about time to wrap it up. I'm getting excited about watching this game, and I'm really excited. We didn't talk about all the things I was right about last week, but I'll try to be fake humble and pretend like I wasn't clairvoyant on most things, because.
Oh, Dominique, you were so great. You were totally right about everything.
Okay, don't start this. See, I don't mind. I feel like this might be a little too inside of people about our relationship. Is you've been a producer of me on many other programs for a while, and there's nothing I hate more than any producer I've worked with, and just any friends that I have. I really don't like fake compliments, and I know you don't mean it. So it just makes me mad. It's not a real compliment.
Of course I don't mean it. A week ago, we said that the Bears should trade Justin Fields, or Justin Fields should demand a trade, and that offensive coordinators don't matter.
I didn't say they don't matter. I said that other coaches can call plays because they got a menu to choose from. And I have not changed my opinion on Justin Fields. I feel like what happened last week gave me more ammunition. Like, Justin Fields was alone out there, just like I said he was. Trying to spoil that man's career. I'm more right than I've ever been about Justin Fields.
You totally convinced me. Great point. You're totally right.
Get out of here. You know what's going to happen? I can't wait till we come back and see that I got all my bets right and you got all your bets wrong. That is that. Leave me alone, Charlie.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.